Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
All right, we're doing something different this hour. I'm very excited about this hour because we have Laurie Pelletier here. She's the head of the AFL-CIO in Connecticut. And you know I'm big on union conversation, not necessarily Laurie's perspective. So I'm excited about having somebody with a totally different perspective and see if we can find any common ground. And maybe she'll be able to convince me of something. Anyway, Laurie Pelletier, welcome back to WTIC.
Todd, thanks for the invite.
Nice to have you here. I don't know what you say to a union person about how they're feeling. Like, how's union life?
Well, union life right now is pretty exciting. I mean, we've seen an uptick in people wanting to join unions.
An uptick? What, I thought they were going out of business, unions.
No, not at all.
No?
I mean, in Connecticut, we've increased union membership since 2013, steadily every year. We're up about 17%.
Public or private?
Public and private and building trades combined.
They're all going up? Or
yep, yeah, they're all going up. We've also seen, we've had a big win in Missouri on pushing back right to work. And, you know, recent poll, I think it was done by Pew, that shows that workers who are under the age of 35, that 68% of them support joining a union.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you see good news.
I see good news.
It's not all negative because it's been a tough time for unions in general over the last several years.
Yeah, no, it has. I mean, there's been a lot of attacks and focusing on workers.
And then there's the Supreme Court decision.
And Supreme Court, Janus decision, and who else knows what's coming down the road?
Other things that you see as ominous coming down the road?
Yeah, there's lots of worker rights issues, there's health and safety issues that are coming down, and what exactly the National Labor Relations Board and OSHA, how long their arm can be. Those are issues mm-hmm. that are coming down the pike.
All right, Laurie Pelletier is here. We're going to talk some union stuff. Get psyched, get pumped. And Laurie says she's happy to take questions, comments, if you get so inspired as we talk. So join in, and we'll get a quick traffic update. We turn to Mike Allen in the Farmington Bank Traffic Center for a look at the roads. What's going on, Mike? Are we talking union stuff, state issues, and all that kind of stuff with Laurie Pelletier, president of the state AFL-CIO? Thank you once again for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
And there is fun stuff to talk about. It is, of course, an election year. And so for you guys, this is kind of survival stuff because you're on the front lines of what people are seeing as the survival of the state, really. And and you guys are potentially at the fulcrum of what's going to happen in terms of policy to help the state get by.
Yeah, you know, we saw the last couple legislative sessions where whether it's, anti-collective bargaining bills, anti-health care or pension bills that have come before the General Assembly and committees. We've been fortunate that we've been able to lobby and push those so they don't get a vote on the floor. But that's what's at stake, because we know that if the anti-worker forces take over in Hartford, that'll be at the top of their list.
Well, so my position is pro-worker, anti-union. Public sector unions in particular, which I see as having no purpose other than rigging elections, that's the dynamic that makes them work. So you have this special interest created by the government in order to protect you from the government, and then money is skimmed off of from taxpayer money into the pockets of the union, then you use that to get Democrats elected. And that cozy thing, to me, has been very destructive. So I just want to get that on the table. You can tell me why I'm wrong. And as I look at this election, I see us trying to face up to a tragedy created by the fact that there are public sector unions. And how do we fix that tragedy? That's the question that I have.
Well, two things. There's no dues dollars that go to candidates. That's the first thing I need to correct you on. Those are all voluntary donations. If a union member wants money taken out of their check separately, that can be done. But
the dues dollars go to who?
The dues dollars go about half goes to the local union for mm-hmm. functioning at the local union.
In terms of the politics, though, how do the dollars enter politics?
Well, the only dollars, direct contributions, have to come from voluntary donations from a union member.
Mm-hmm.
Money, you know, we spend money talking to members about issues. We don't tell them who to vote for. We may say that so-and-so candidate is the best on these issues, but how you vote is your own personal decision. But there's no dues dollars that go to candidates.
What do they go to in politics? Do they go to the political parties?
No.
In what way do they – are you saying no dollars influence politics in any way other than
issues? Not dues dollars. It's only spent on educating union members about the issues.
What other dollars are there?
Well, voluntary contributions outside of the dues.
No, but in the possession of the union. So AFL-CIO gets its money from dues, does it not?
Right. We get our money from the individual affiliated unions who mm-hmm. sent us per capita. The individual unions, they get union dues. Half of it is usually like to the national union for training and so forth. And then within the local union, that is spent on obviously the administration of local union, training as well, but an education for union members, whether it's leadership training or if there's, you know, certainly there's an issue at the state capitol, for example, if they were going to do away with, just for argument's sake, if they were going to do away with OSHA, we certainly would want to communicate with our members the importance of keeping OSHA.
So, excuse me a sec. So, yep. AFL-CIO is an umbrella.
Correct.
That's why it's called a federation.
Correct.
And so you're sort of the union for the unions? Is that how it works?
That's how it works.
And what's the necessity? It just gives you more leverage, more intelligence?
Well, it's what a union is. It's right, the strength together. The idea that we can speak with a voice for whether it's the building trades on construction issues, whether it's in the private sector dealing with Pratt or Sikorsky or Electric Boat, or if it's in the public sector dealing with municipalities or state employees.
But why doesn't that make you weaker? So if I'm an electrician, for example, and an electrical union could know exactly what my issues are, you're going to be weaker on those issues perhaps because you have to cover all this different stuff.
No,
it's the reverse of specialization.
No, but it's bringing everybody together. When you have a teacher that goes up to the Capitol to testify on behalf of an electrical worker's license that it should remain this way because of safety, because of training, that's very powerful.
For somebody other than somebody in that profession to talk about it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, okay. It's that we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm. Larry Pelletier is here from the AFL-CIO. If you have any questions, comments, we'd love to hear from you. So the influence, how is it exactly then that you guys rig elections? How do you make that happen? How do you arm twist politicians into dismantling the economic future of the state?
I resent the word rig because I don't think that's it, or arm twist. We lobby just like every other organization does. I did not come out and say, like CBIA did, that they're going to spend $600,000 influencing this election. We communicate with our members. Workers have a stake in this. They're taxpayers. And so that's our responsibility, is to make sure that they understand what the issues are, just as it is CBIA's responsibility to make sure that their members understand what the issues are.
All right, hang on. We're going to get a traffic update. We'll talk more. Larry Pelletier is here. You hear what a good sport she is. I can just say that stuff to her, and she just sits there unflappable in response. So thank you for that, Larry. We go to Mike Allen. He's also unflappable, except when there's traffic, and then he gets all of her clamped. He's in the Farmington Bank Traffic Center. Mike. So Larry Pelletier is here. We're psyched to have her. We're talking union stuff. If you have experience with unions, or if you have experience against unions, if you have knowledge on this of any kind and you want to comment, you're welcome to do it. 860-522-9842. Let us go to Mike in Barkhamsted. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Todd. Quick comments. I was a union delegate twice I've been a union delegate. So once was when Al Gore was running for president. And we had a big convention, meeting of all the delegates up in, I think it was Sturbridge, Mass. And they asked, who wants to go to a rally for Al Gore in Boston? So they took the whole boatload of us. I don't know. I went along. I generally vote conservative. But I went along. I'd never been to something like that before. But the union did pay and brought us all down there, and we walked around with our signs, you know, wanting Al Gore for president. So it was definitely pro-Democrat. And also on the other side of the coin, I was a delegate, and another older delegate told me once, he said, always remember the boss is not your friend. So I found unions can be very beneficial. Yes. Very beneficial in protecting workers' rights. And even in the state where I work, where I was a delegate, if they can get away with stuff and misinterpret the contract and find a way to abuse employees, it does happen. Unions serve a good purpose, but at the same time...
Wait, that doesn't sound like a good purpose.
What's that?
That sounds like an insidious purpose.
Well, the Al Gore thing I disagreed with. I went along because I just, like I say, I like checking out...
No, and the boss is the enemy... If you can find a way to work around the contract, or however you put that.
Oh, no, the boss would work around the contract. Yes, sir. You cut me off. Sorry.
No, that was Laurie talking. Go ahead. That's all right. She was just clarifying for me.
Okay, thank you. No, the states, and I think all businesses, will find a way, even with unions, to work around the contract, to find a way to get one over on the employees if they can. So I've experienced it, and we had to fight really hard in the hospital where I worked to get proper staffing levels, to have them come in there and meet some very dangerous needs. So I've been on both sides of the coin, but I do agree the politics to find some way to, because I disagree with abortion, I disagree with a lot of issues that the union supports in a lot of ways.
Yep.
But thank you for the phone.
All right, thank you, Mike. Good to hear from you. Laurie, any reaction to Mike?
Well, again, I think that... not every boss is bad, but there certainly are bosses that if they could, they would stretch the rules and get away with things. So I think that that's an important piece. And I think every worker deserves to have supportive of an organization such as a union. I mean, CEOs belong to all sorts of clubs that they take care of one another.
Yeah,
so,
but most workers aren't CEOs. Most workers go to work every day, have no problem with their bosses or the places they work. They get paid to do a job. They do it until they don't want to do it anymore. Then they go somewhere else, work, and they generally don't have any problem with the bosses.
Well, I don't know that that's true. I mean, I think that that's sort of, we wish it was that way, but it's not. I mean, the reality is that whether you're a woman, you're a person of color, that the workplace is different for you than if you're a white male.
Explain that, because I'm not a woman of color or a person of color or a woman, so I can't. I don't know what those issues would be that are automatic that you experience because you're those things.
First of all, women are paid. We see it all the time regarding pay equity. Women are paid less out of the box unless you have a union contract that says you won't be paid less. You're going to be paid the same. Same thing with people of color. It's even worse. I mean, women of color, 67 cents for every dollar that a white male has. So those are some of the issues.
Do you actually believe those numbers?
Yes,
or is that
I do.
Just part of your training?
No, I absolutely believe those numbers. Absolutely do.
Because it's funny, if you listen to scientists talk about numbers, they'll tell you that any different group you make, so if you're going to divide workers up randomly, but like by race, which has no relationship to them as workers, they just happen to have a race, or by religion, or by what town they were born in, or what time they like to wake up in the morning, any division you would make, you would find no correlation between their pay and in that as being part of that group and somebody of another group. That anytime you make those random divisions, you find there are anomalies, and that the impossible thing to create would actually be consistency behind those as you went from one group to the next and compared them.
But there's no law that prohibits employers from doing that. So they will
from
do
doing
it.
What?
From paying women or people of color less. So they will do it until they...
Yes, but employers will pay everybody less if they can. That's their job.
Which is another reason for a union. Why is that their job?
Well, they're providing, because they're running a business.
But they're also... The workers are the ones that are actually doing the work to provide the
wealth. And
they
get paid for it, and they get to decide whether to accept that job or not. So that's where the whole contract is, right there.
Well, no, that's not a contract. That's a one-way street, because if the employer gets to just decide, you know, you're not going to share in the wealth that you're making. You're not going to share in the product. You know,
their wealth is none of my business. I get paid to come here to work at a radio station.
Right?
I have to talk, which is grueling work, as you can see. And I probably need all kinds of people to protect me, but nobody does protect me. And I work for wonderful people. We have nice time with each other.
You're fortunate.
They pay me a paltry amount of money to do this, and I accept it because I love doing it. And that's the deal. I don't need anyone running around deciding because I'm a certain age I'm getting screwed, or because I'm a certain height I'm getting. It's all nonsense to me.
Well, you're fortunate that, as you know, in your life you've never encountered that.
No, I've encountered stuff. I've been fired because I'm the oldest guy around, whatever, but who cares? That's life.
Well, that's nice that you're able to say that, but a single mom who gets fired because maybe she's late because she had to drop her kid off at school because there's no contract to say there needs to be progressive discipline, that's not so fair to her.
All right, let's get a quick call in. Thank you for indulging me, Laurie. Laurie Pelletier is here from the AFL-CIO. Kevin, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
You're on the air. Talk to Laurie.
Laurie, I beg to differ about unions. I beg to differ on the fact that employees of the union don't give any money to a political party. I belong to a union, and I know for a fact, because I had to sign the card, that 36 of every dollar that I make, or 36 cents an hour of every hour that I make, goes into a general fund, which goes to a political party.
Well, it can't be that much. You'd be paying a fortune for political parties. It might be.
No, 36 cents an hour of what I make.
Yes, goes to the union. Is that what you say? But that sounds.
It goes to the union, which. We all know, because it's on the card, it goes to whatever political campaign they want it to.
Can you clarify for Kevin? Is he getting something wrong?
Yeah, I think you're getting something mixed up. Maybe you signed a card for a voluntary contribution for 36 cents an hour to go to a PAC, a union PAC. That may be it.
Yes, but that's
so it's
exactly
not union dues.
It
okay, so but it's a no. separate voluntary donation.
Right, but
okay.
You cannot not sign that card.
Well, you may feel I don't believe it.
I'm just telling you,
Kevin. I wish we had more time for you. We have to get to a traffic update and some news. You want to stay around longer?
Sure.
Laurie
sure.
Pelletier is here from the AFL-CIO. We'll take more calls if you wish. We're talking unions with Laurie Pelletier. She knows a lot about them because she's the president of the AFL-CIO here in Connecticut. And it's fun to rabble-rouse with her and get her reaction to things. 860-522-9842 if you have anything you want to say to Laurie. And we'll take Paul next. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Thank you for the call, sir.
Hi. I just want to say that I worked at Hamilton Standard years ago. I was actually, I didn't want to join a union. I actually was forced to join a union. It was peer pressure that just forced me to join the union. I only worked at Hamilton for maybe 2.5 years. The union didn't do a dang thing for me to help me get my job back or anything. I just ticked me off because I really didn't like, I don't like unions. And I just, you know, I'm just one of those people that was forced, and all that money just went to the union reps, and I didn't get crap for it.
All right, Paul, it sounds like an overall sad part of your life. You have anything you want to ask him?
Well, again, a union is a membership organization, and so sometimes it's easier to say I didn't get anything out of it than trying to participate in it. You know, friends of mine say that it's like a gym membership. You know, if you just belong to the gym, you're not necessarily going to get healthier.
Yeah, but the gym you talk yourself into doing, and you make yourself
right,
do
it. Right, but you need to show up. And
yes,
union members, certainly they pay dues. Look, a lot of people belong to various social organizations, the Elks, the Lions. But they also donate time, and they show up, and that's what makes it better for everybody. And so, you know, it's disappointing for Paul that he had that experience. But at the end of the day, if I had been him, like I did, I got involved with my union when I had trouble and I needed the union, then I got involved with them as a way to pay back.
That's how your career in union management got started?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's try Rob in the car. Hello there, Rob.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. This is my first time calling in. I've been listening to you for a long time. Hi, Laurie. I just want to tell you two different things. One, I've been a union member. I worked for the state 32 years and had, no, I'm not a high-paid state employee. I'm a social worker. I don't do overtime, and I have a lot of people and friends in the private sector who make a lot more money than me, and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. The big thing is I'm part of 1199 SEIU, and I'm very, very proud of my union. When I started 32 years ago for the state, we fought not for money, Todd. We fought for just being on the floor, rubber gloves, better equipment. So when we were lifting the individuals we served, there wasn't four or five of us and people were getting hurt. We got equipment so people didn't get hurt, foyer lifts and different mechanical things. Instead of using cloth diapers for the individuals back then, we got the adult Depends so that they didn't have to be, you know, they'd have dignity and respect. We also were able to get more staffing, so we were able to serve the individuals better and not have 30, 40 people to a building, and the staffing got so much better.
All right, so you feel like you've gotten a lot out of it.
Yeah, the union has helped out, not only me, but the people I've served, the individuals I've served.
So it allows you to give better service, it sounds like you're saying. Hold that response, Laurie. We're going to get a quick traffic update. Laurie Pelletier is here from the AFL-CIO, and we are going to check in now with the Farmington Bank Traffic Center and find out what Mike Allen is seeing on the roads. Go ahead, sir. WTIC, we're talking union stuff. Laurie Pelletier is the president of the Connecticut AFL-CIO, so we are chatting with her about union things. If you have questions, comments, we'd love to hear your perspective on unions. And let's go to Mark next on WTIC. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
Thanks for joining in the conversation.
Yes, I've been in the union since I got out of the Marine Corps back in 1985 at Pratt & Whitney. When I first got hired, it was an open shop. It was very awkward at times between the union members and non-union members until we got agency fees. But what I do remember from back then was, you know, people would get in trouble that weren't in the union, still call out a shop steward, and occasionally, you know, if it was a serious matter, their case would end up costing the union thousands of dollars because they'd have to take it to arbitration for somebody that doesn't even pay into the union. And that never just seemed fair to me, and that's why I don't understand this Janus decision.
I get, you know, my sense of why the Janus decision went the way it did is because there's a forced association. Was that the basis of it?
Well, what they said was that it somehow infringed their right to free speech.
That's right. It was the speech argument.
Right.
Yeah. So by being forced to associate with the union, then I'm being forced to have you expressing.
Except for the fact that, you know, the agency fee is less than the full dues because when they audit it, they say, okay, this really can't be counted because it's not about enforcing the contract. And so taking that piece out of it, but still allowing those people that are working in that facility to call out a steward and to utilize the process, that's a problem. Because look, everybody would love to have free cable. But the reality is that at some point, you're not going to be able to afford to produce the free cable. And it's the same thing, that there are costs that are involved, whether it's training, whether it's materials, whether it's paying for an arbitrator. That's not inexpensive by any means. That if you're going to utilize that service, you should have to pay for it.
And how will that affect your business here in Connecticut?
Well, look, the unions here, the public employee unions have been, you know, this was not a surprise. The court before that was supposed to hear a case, but with one of the justices passing away, it pushed it off. So they've been preparing. They've been talking to union members, getting them to sign up again, reaffirming that they're sticking with the union. And, you know, they've done a tremendous job again, educating, something that the labor movement fell away from for a number of years, but now getting back into having these one-on-one conversations.
What's your feeling about the CBAC agreement and talk on the Republican side of having that there is no way to get out from under the burden that the state has, the deficit of $4.6 billion in the budget cycle? What's your feeling about how that should play out?
Well, again, they kick the can down the road, Democrats and Republicans, governors and legislatures. You know, the savings that state employees have produced in this most recent CBAC agreement is $24 billion over the course of these next 10 years. So basically, state employees are paying for 1 year of the budget. So the state only has to come up with money for 9 years of a budget, because $24 billion is about our budget. And, you know, this is taking money out of people's pockets. Look, if people who are on pensions, for every dollar they get in pension, it's like $3.14 in the economy, the local economy. So it's good to have pensions for people because they spend it. It's economics 101. If I have money to spend, I spend it. I buy a car tire. The car tire manufacturer goes on vacation, pays for the hotel worker, and so forth as it goes around. So they saved the state $24 billion. That's nothing to sneeze at, because I don't know where they would have gotten $24 billion elsewhere.
Yes, but the problem remains, where are they going to get $4.6 billion? And how do the next 10 years get survived if you can't cut workforce, if you have no way to dig into that debt and reduce it?
Well, the other thing is that if everybody were to retire today, there'd be a problem. But the reality is that actuarially, down the road, now that they've dealt with sort of this cliff and they've smoothed it out, yes, it's going to be debt. You had 40 years nearly of not paying the bill.
Right.
And so that's where the real problem is.
Yes.
I don't know that.
No, that's the problem.
I don't know that
that because of this unusual thing of having this third party special interest group that leverages what the state pays workers, that politicians have been incentivized to sort of sell the state out and promise too much and not put the money away. And now here we are with debt that can't be paid.
But I don't think that it has anything to do with – it was the union, as a matter of fact, when CBAC came together in 1987 that said, wait a minute, we got a problem. Nobody's been putting money in. And it was because of those negotiations with CBAC that some of the money started to get put in. But prior to the state employee workers forming
unions.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Hold on one sec. Hold that thought, yep. Laurie. Laurie Pelletier is here from the AFL-CIO. And Mike Allen is here from the Farmington Bank Traffic Center. He has an update on the commute. Go ahead, Mike. 860-522-9842. Thanks again, Laurie, for taking the time to chat with us. This is
a
fun conversation to have. Ray in Newington is next. Hey, Ray.
Hi. How you doing?
We're doing good. Thank you for joining this conversation.
Good. I'm a first-time caller, but a long-time listener. And I have a question for Laurie, or actually a situation that I had when I worked for a major telephone company back years ago. I had a day off, and on that day off, I suffered a dissected aorta. And that was a very much of a life-threatening situation, and it also caused a loss of blood and oxygen to my T2.
Okay, Ray,
T3.
Focus in on what the issue is regarding the union to discuss.
Well, the issue is that when I was working for them, because I couldn't work 100% of the job description, I was let go by the phone company, and they told me when I went to go see
Ray. Can you fire up a question for us? Or
well, I'd like to know how come I was with the company for over 23
right.
years.
Ray, I'm sorry. It sounds like you don't quite have your thoughts.
Yeah,
Did you hear anything?
I think it depends on what the contract says. I mean, obviously he had some medical issues, and depending on, you know, each collective bargaining agreement is a little bit different. But if you can't return to work, then there are some options for the company to be able to dismiss you. But without knowing what the contract says, that's just my best guess.
Okay. Thank you for that. Matt, hello. You're on with Laurie Pelletier from the AFL-CIO.
Hey, how you doing, Todd and Laurie? Yeah, I want to take issue with Laurie's comment about how, you know, the pension guy gets a dollar and he gets $3.14 circulated back into the economy. It's kind of a, economists call it the broken window fallacy. What I think she's overlooking or glossing over, frankly, is that, maybe the pensioner takes that dollar and goes out on a vacation and pays some hotel guy worker for his vacation money. But at the same time, the taxes to pay for that pension come out of my pocket, which means
it's being removed from the economy. And it's especially tough if the dollar is being spent down in Florida and the taxes are being taken out of the economy in Connecticut.
My larger point is that, so I got to cut back. I don't eat out as much. And so the restaurant workers in Connecticut have a little less money to deal with. So it's just, it basically enriches one party at the expense of another. So I think the economic argument is a little off base, frankly. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Good to hear from you.
So, look, I don't disagree with the premise that, if we didn't have this situation of 40 years of not paying this, mm-hmm. we would be having a different conversation. But part of the problem, too, is that we've seen over the course of the last 30 years that the wage, the inequality in wages has changed, too. I mean, it's dramatic where used to be as productivity increased, workers got a piece of that pie, and that changed in the mid-1980s. So we need to look at everything. We need to make sure that, we have attorneys that work for the state of Connecticut, been there 30 years, making $100,000. If they were in the private sector as attorneys, they would be making loads more. But they have decided, for whatever reason, mm-hmm. to work for the state. And I don't think that, this issue is because of any individual or any group of state employees. I think this is a problem that was created because legislatures and governors wanted to kick the can down the road.
Sure, as they've done in many states. There's something structurally flawed about this arrangement, I would argue. And if you simply didn't have public sector unions, then none of these problems would exist.
Well, then I would also argue that you would not have a dedicated workforce.
It would probably be much smaller.
We're at the 1960s level as it is. I don't know how much smaller state government can get. You were having a conversation earlier about DMV and the problems there. Can't.
But those are profits. DMV is a profit center for the state, right? They're generating money in huge amounts for doing very little, except for allowing a license to stay valid or something like that.
Right. There are a lot of profit centers. Look, we think there should be more enforcement officers for consumer protection. There should be more enforcement officers hired for the Department of Revenue Services. So I agree with you that there are certainly areas that we should be enhancing, but that's not what's happening. We're just looking at it that we got to cut state government, and so it's being cut across the board. Mm-hmm.
So, but it isn't in terms of spending. The dollars going out are still unaffordable, which is unfortunate. Let's go. Darren, can you give us a quick comment or question?
Sure. I heard Lori mentioning that if you take advantage of the union system without paying into it, that it's not sustainable. And isn't that the same type of thing that we on the conservative side have been saying about the socialist agenda of just giving away free stuff and nobody paying into the system?
Well, I agree with you that when we give away free stuff, we need to first look at corporations. We need to look at the fact that Jeff Bezos, for example, at Amazon is shopping around this headquarters too, and he's just wants states to open their checkbooks to him. We see all sorts of, Department of Economic and Community Development, although they've done some really tremendous things, they have, given money to hedge funds, to me in my checking account, certainly $17 million would be a lot of money. But to a hedge fund, or maybe Todd, in your checkbook, it wouldn't be that much.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
But to a hedge fund manager, it was something, right?
All right, let's get JR in on the conversation quickly. Go ahead, JR.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. This is a neutral question for both you guys, okay? Do you think that, with unions and how they raise the rates, the hourly rates, and things like that, and all they demand for, doesn't it discourage employers from hiring more people because it's going to be too expensive?
All right, you take that one, Laura. We've only got a minute. Thank you, JR.
Yeah, thanks, JR. No, not at all. I mean, if as union wages go up, and we've seen part of the reason that wages overall are down is because union membership is down. But as, you know, rising tide, when we all do better, we all do better. And so that's the reality. Look, there's plenty of corporate profits out there. We saw in this last tax package from the federal government that it did not go to workers. It went to stock buybacks.
Laurie, thank you so much for taking the time to come in.
Happy to be here, Todd.
It's been great fun. You have a parting thought you want to share with the audience?
Well, I just think, look, the one thing that connects us all is work, and we need to just make sure that we're trying to all work together so that, you know, families can make ends meet, and that's what we want in Connecticut.
All right. Laurie Pelletier is the president of the Connecticut AFL-CIO. And thanks to you for coming in and taking the time. It's been great having you. I will take a few more calls on this after news, and perhaps you have something you want to say that you were nervous to say with Laurie here, and we can do that after she, because she is a pretty intimidating character. I can... She's making faces in the background. All right, so thanks to Laurie Pelletier.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.